Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo. So we're reading from Canto 5, chapters number 4, chapters entitled The Characteristics of Rishabhdev, and this is verse 10, 11, 12, and 13. So here we have the prose, so we'll just do the word for word. Tam him, anu, following, kushavarta, kushavarta, ilavarta, ilavarta, brahmavarta, brahmavarta, malaya, malaya, ketu, ketu, badrasena, Badrasena, Indrasprik, Indrasprik, Vidarbha, Vidarbha, Kikata, Kikata, Iti, thus, Nava, nine, Navati, 90. Pradana, older than. This is translation, there's no purport. Following Bart, these were 99 other sons. Among these were 9 elderly sons, named Kushavarta, Ilavarta, Brahmavarta, Malaya, Ketu, Vajrasena, Indrasprik, Vidarbha, and Kikata. Text number 12, translation. In addition to these sons, there were Kavi, Havi, Antariksha, Prabhuda, Pipalayana, Avihotra, Drumila, Chamasa, Karabhajana. These were all very exalted, advanced devotees and authorized preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam. These devotees were glorified due to their strong devotion to Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they were exalted. To satisfy the mind perfectly, I, that is Sukadeva Goswami, shall therefore describe the characteristics of these 9 devotees when I discuss the conversation between Narada and Vasudeva. So that reference here about Sukadeva Goswami's discussion, that's in the 11th canto, when the 9 Yogendras, these are the principal sons of Rishabhdev, they ask questions, and they're answering questions from King Nini. So there's text number 13, translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In addition to these 9, this is, it says 19, but it's actually 90. In addition to these 19 sons mentioned above, there were 81 younger brothers, okay, all born of Rishabhdev and Jayanti. According to the order of their father, they became well-cultured, well-behaved, very pure in their activities, and expert in Vedic knowledge and the performance of Vedic rituals. Thus, they all became perfectly qualified brahmanas, purport by Srila Prabhupada. From this verse, we have good information on how the castes are qualified according to quality and work. Rishabhdeva, a king, was certainly a kshatriya. He had 100 sons, and out of these, 10 were engaged as kshatriyas and ruled the planet. 9 sons became good preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam. They were Mahabhagavatas, and this indicates that they were above the position of brahmanas. The other 81 sons became highly qualified brahmanas. These are some practical examples of how one can become fit for a certain type of activity, by qualification, not by birth. All of the sons of Maharaj Rishabdev were Kshatriyas by birth, but by quality, some of them became Kshatriyas and some became Brahmanas. Nine became preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavata Dharma Darshanaha, which means that they were above the categories of Kshatriyas and Brahmana. End of purport. Translation again. In addition to these 19 sons mentioned above, there were 81 younger ones, all born of Rishabdev and Jayanti. According to the order of their father, they became well-cultured, well-behaved, very pure in their activities, and expert in Vedic knowledge, and the performance of Vedic rituals. Thus they all became perfectly qualified brahmanas. Om Agyan Timirandasya Kina Jina Salakaya Chaksu Ummilitam Nena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. About the sons of Lord Rishabdev. And here, Srila Prabhupada points out, although Rishabdev had, he was a Kshatriya, and therefore his sons were born within that, what we say, family. Still, they had to become qualified according to their particular activities. Although they were all born of Maharaj Rishabdev, some became Kshatriyas and some actually took up the activities of Brahmanas. So the point that's being emphasized here is that it's not by birth, it's by qualification. One may be born in a particular family, a Brahmin family, a Kshatriya family, or even a Vaishya family. And one might perform those activities according to that particular varna. But the qualification is not simply birth, it's by having those qualities that develop according to proper training. Some many times people are born in Brahmin families, and we see is very prominent in the land of Bhardvarsya. People are born in good families, Brahmin families. But yet, they take up other occupations. Prabhupada says, you know, and then, of course, they claim, well, I am Brahmin. What is Brahmin? Partan, partan, yajan, yajan, dana, pratikraha. To teach, to learn scriptures, to teach scripture, to worship the Lord, to teach others how to worship the Lord, to give it in charity, and to accept charitable gifts. These are the six activities of a Brahmana. And Prabhupada points out that someone may be born in a Brahmin family, and it's common for people to take up other activities, but still think that they're a Brahmana. Prabhupada made one statement that, yes, I'm Brahmana, but what do you do? Well, I'm pulling rickshaw. I'm pulling rickshaw. I have my thread, but still, no, actually, according to what your qualifications, not your particular birth. And this is very important to understand, because very much the whole caste system is actually the downfall of the Vedic culture. The strict, rigid aspect of the caste system. One is born in a particular family, and therefore one is thinking accordingly. Of course, way, way back in the early 1900s, there was a very strong controversy based on what is a Brahmana and what is a Vaishnava. That was the time of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he was explaining and preaching based on scriptures that actually, a Vaishnava is better than a Brahmana, because a Brahmana, if he's not engaged in devotional service, if he's not taking up, he can't even save himself, what to speak of others. But if one is born in a Sudra family, or in any family, Kirata Hunam Palinda Pukasa Ambira Sambhav Yavana Kashadaya Yane Chapapa Upasrayasraya, Siddhanti Tasmai Siddhanti Padvavishnave Namaha. And it's explained in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that even if one is born in a very despicable, low class, totally unqualified family, if somehow or other they take to the process of devotional service and become purified through that process, it's not that, it's the process that purifies one. It's not the birth or any kind of material qualifications. One can be expert in so many things, but expertise, especially in material qualifications, will simply lead to another birth unless one uses that expertise in the service of the Lord. In fact, it becomes a big weight. It says that if a person is drowning and if they have a crown on their head, they go down faster. That weight is all the material qualifications that's being used in the wrong way, or what we say for material sense gratification. But if one has no material qualifications, and even born in a very unqualified family, if they take to devotional service, they are considered saintly. They are rightly situated. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was preaching on that basis. And there was the Brahminical, especially the Smarta class, was very strong at that time. And they were, challenging. So there was some decision to make a debate. Well, who was actually more qualified to practice, devotional life? The Brahmanas or the Vaishnava? Who is actually more, what is higher, Brahmanas or Vaishnavas? So in Vindapur, I think it was in 1911, September, and there was a debate to schedule. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur was scheduled to go and represent the Vaishnavas. And at that time, there weren't so many prominent Vaishnavas, but there were many, many Brahmanas from different castes and different gotras. So the debate was set, but right at the last moment, very close to the actual date of the debate, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur came down with a very, very strong case of rheumatic fever. He was very sick and he was bedridden. He couldn't go. So he was thinking, what will I do? Of course, at that time, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who was at that time Sri Varshavanavi Devi Daitayai Das, he had taken initiation from Gorkishore. He was a brahmachari and the son of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. He actually compiled some written papers based on scriptural evidence, which he did research. He presented it to his father, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and he showed it to him. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur was really enlivened. He said, yes, you are qualified. You go and speak the actual understanding, the truth of Vedic, the precision of the Vaishnavas. Of course, those teachings later came out in the form of a book which was published in ISKCON, known as Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. But he went on behalf of his father, and he was quite unknown. And he was asked to speak first. The debate was for 3 days, and he was the first speaker. And there were so many Brahmanas, qualified Brahmanas there. Others, a lot of Smarta Brahmanas, those who were in name only. Smarta Brahmanas are more like those who try to make some living off their spiritual knowledge. It's more like for an occupation, like selling the deity. Even today we see in many places, sometimes I even wonder in ISKCON if it happens too, we see it sometimes, that the temple authorities are trying to simply make money of the local population by showing the deity or dressing the deity or making everything nice so people become inspired to give donations. It's nice to glorify the Lord, to glorify the deity, but the goal is to inspire a person to take up devotional service, to develop their attraction for the Lord, and not for some economic gain. If it becomes for an economic gain, the whole thing becomes spoiled. And we see that sometimes in our, especially in America, it's being done. Someone comes, if they give a nice donation, they go away, take a darshan, it's considered success. But it's not success. Real success is to awaken one's devotional activities where they can actually take up the process of devotional service. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he spoke. And he began by glorifying the brahmanas and quoting verse after verse after verse from various scriptures, glorifying the position of the brahmanas. That one is born in a Brahmin family, one is considered to have a very successful birth. So many scriptural statements. And the brahmanas, they were enjoying that. And they actually said, he's on the other side, but really he's on our side. He's on our side. So they were listening and feeling so happy. Then at one point during his narration, he changed and started to speak and quotes very strong evidences from Shastras. And if one is a Brahmana, but they are not engaged in devotional service, they can't even save themselves, but to speak about saving others. And he quoted other verses. This one's born in the Sudra family. I believe there's a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by Narada Muni. He makes that statement. It doesn't matter according to what birth you take. If you engage in devotional service, you're better than a Brahmin. Prabhupada talks about how when the Americans first came, when the devotees from America first came to India back in the early, I guess it was 1971, and, the local population would see the devotees and they would very much appreciate. And sometimes the devotees would say that the people are saying to us, "Oh, you're doing so nice, therefore I give you a blessing in your next birth, take birth in a Brahmin family. This is our blessing to you." Because, we come from the West, born in a very obscure background, no training in any Vedic culture, considered below the Vanashram system, Milechers and Yavanas, and this is correct. But once one takes to the process of devotional service, then that process alone can purify. It's just like, when you put bell metal becomes transformed into gold by a certain alchemical process. So in the same way, one becomes transformed by executing the process of pure devotional service. And he's no longer within the Vanashram system. Gopi Bharta Padagamalaya Dasa Dasa Anudas. Lord Chaitanya said, "I am not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Sudra, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Sannyasi, I'm none of these things. I'm simply servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis of Vrindavan." So that is a devotee. He doesn't identify himself with any of the external, trappings. And so the local people would say, "Oh, we bless you in your next life. May you take birth in Brahmin family." So Prabhupada would laugh. He would say, one of the devotees would tell him that. Yes, they're thinking. He says, Prabhupada used the example. I forgot the exact statement. But something like a police chief, he gives, or the, I forgot, it's more or less like the police chief gives a blessing to the mayor, "May you become a police chief in your next life." Something like that. So this is what happens when the caste system becomes rigid and follows. But one takes up devotional service, one becomes qualified to worship the Lord, to engage in the process of the pure devotional service. Now there's a kind of pride that develops when one is born in a very good family and one develops certain qualifications based on that birth. Janma Aishwar Shruti Shri Bir. If one has good qualities at the time of birth, then one can develop a certain pride based on those qualities. But if one comes to devotional service and also develops a certain type of what we say pride, or a certain type of what we say feeling of superiority based on that, devotees can also fall into that category too. But one starts to think in terms of, well, I'm a devotee, therefore I'm special, or I'm better than others, like that. But that type of pride, I mean, there's a type of pride, it's not pride, but one should feel fortunate that one has the opportunity to engage in devotional service. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is very strong, and therefore he's offering that opportunity to everyone. But how many are taking it up? So to take it up means one's good fortune. It's like, it's explained that when one begins chanting of the holy names of the Lord, Shreya Kaiva Vichandrika Vitaranam, there is a kind of lotus flower, it's called a Kairava. And this lotus flower blooms under the, what we say, the rays of the moon. And the holy name is like the cooling rays of the moon that unfolds the beautiful lotus named Kairava. And the Kairava is compared to one's good fortune. Everyone has some good fortune. And the holy name awakens one's good fortune, which means pure devotional service to the Lord. So that is our good fortune. But if one becomes proud that I'm a devotee, then everything becomes spoiled. In a sense that one develops pride and one starts to think in terms of that I am better. I'm fortunate, but what is my position is becoming fortunate, then it's my responsibility to make others fortunate. When one has good fortune, then that good fortune really becomes one's good fortune when one spends or uses that good fortune to give opportunities to others to also become fortunate. And that is the best use of one's good fortune. Not that, and Prabhupada uses the example, not that, you know, I'm a devotee and let everyone else go to hell. Sometimes we see that. Not, of course, here in Radha Gopinath. We don't see that here. But in the West, sometimes, or in other places, people are happy. And it's called neophyte devotee, a third-class devotee, Prakriti Bhakta. One is happy simply worshipping the Lord, or feeling satisfied worshipping the Lord and worshipping the spiritual master, but no regards for the other devotees and no regards for people in general. And that's third class platform. So good fortune means to spread one's good fortune and give that good fortune to others in the form of inspiring them to take up this chanting of the holy names of the Lord. That is really the preaching in this age. Somehow or other, inspire others to take up the holy names. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was visiting Kurukshetra, after taking darshan from the deity of Lord Kurma, the Lord met one Brahman known as the Kurma Brahman. And he was a grihastha, he had family, but he became so much attracted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he wanted to associate with the Lord. He couldn't give up the Lord's association. He invited the Lord to come to his home and to take prasadam, which the Lord did, but after some time the Lord was moving on, going on, traveling. But he wanted to come with him. The Lord said, no. You stay where you are and you take up the activities of a preacher. You make everyone. Don't change your position. Simply make others Krishna conscious. Kiba viva kiba nasa sudra ke ninoi yehi Krishna tattva vedi sehi guru hoi. No matter who you are, whether you're a householder, grihastha, whatever your apparent material situation is, you know, preach the holy names of the Lord. And then, Lord Chaitanya, then he said, anyone who does this will have my darshan. Anyone who does this will never lose my association. One who takes up the mission of preaching this message. But we have to be very careful that this element of pride doesn't come in. Because as soon as pride is there, then the whole thing is spoiled. And Krishna becomes... What is pride? Pride is a sense of adopting something that is not. It's an illusion. It's part of the illusion. Pride is part of the illusion. One can perform a particular activity, can preach, can distribute books, can open temples, perform so many wonderful activities. We were hearing from yesterday how Bhavananda Prabhu was explaining how, you know, so many stalwart disciples of Srila Prabhupada perform so many activities, but yet after some time, for different reasons, may have left. Well, why? Sometimes it may be due to the fact that one becomes, what we say, overwhelmed by success. If you never do anything wonderful, really, then you don't become proud. If you have no qualifications, there's nothing to be proud of. But if one somehow or other, due to the mercy of the Lord, thinks that mercy that is coming, that allows one to do so many, what we say, successful and wonderful things in devotional service, one takes credit for that, or one starts to become illusioned by one's success, then what happens? And then pride goeth before the fall. One starts to think that, you know, I did it, or I'm qualified, or look what I have done. So one has to be careful. To be a Vaishnava is the best position. It's not anything within this material world, but at the same time, it's easy to become affected by this pride or the sense of self-importance that one may give simply by doing that. And sometimes they say even a pauper is proud of his penny. Though he has nothing, because he has something, he still becomes proud. But everything comes by the grace of the Lord. And when one performs an activity, it's not simply one is the supreme doer. It's explained that material nature, the time, the place, the facility, and the mercy of the Lord all enter into the activity of that particular activity, which makes the activity complete. But ultimately, it's the grace of the Lord. And so, therefore, a devotee always depends on Krishna. That is there are six symptoms of surrender. Six symptoms of surrender. To accept things favorable for one's devotional service, to reject things unfavorable, to always feel oneself meek and humble. One of them is always to depend on Krishna, depend on the Lord in all circumstances. And actually that is Krishna conscious, to be always dependent on the mercy of the Lord, coming through the Lord's pure representative. But that mercy is what makes everything successful. Prabhupada said, endeavor and pray. Make some effort, but at the same time, pray for the mercy in order to make the effort. Otherwise, one can perform an activity, and if one Because sometimes we are given a service that seems to be very difficult. It may seem to be beyond our ability to execute in so many different ways. But by the mercy of the Lord, anything is possible. Mukam karoti vachalam langum pangate girim yat kripa tamaham mande shigurun dinatarinam. And that by the mercy of the spiritual master, a layman can cross mountains, a blind man can see the stars, and a dumb man can recite very wonderful poetry. So what is our qualification? Simply the mercy of the Lord, the mercy of the pure devotees, the mercy of the assembled Vaishnavas. Really, that is that which makes everything successful. Without that, there's no question of success in devotional service. So we're always praying for the mercy, somehow or other. And that mercy is unlimited. Krishna Prabhupada says, what can you hold in two hands that Krishna is giving with ten? What can you hold in two hands that Krishna is giving with ten? And what can you keep in two hands that Krishna is taking away with ten? He also uses that feature also, that you can't hold on to anything in this world. This material world is simply, it's dukalayam asasratam, Krishna says. It's temporary and it's miserable. Yesterday we were hearing from Bhavananda Prabhu. He was explaining how, in so many ways, that there's no value to this material world. But we're in it. Actually, there is. There's some value, in the sense that it's an opportunity to get out of this material world. There's two reasons for this material world. One is to keep those who want to stay here entrapped within the illusion, and to help those who want to get out, to get out. So everything in this material world, if it's used in the service of the Lord, it's a means to get out. But if it's used in the wrong way, for the wrong purpose, in the world with the wrong intentions, it keeps one locked up. One may have a lot of money, but if one uses that money to engage in sense gratification, the money becomes the source of their suffering. People who have a lot of money are miserable. And sometimes you see, who are the most miserable people? Are the most people with the most material facilities, the most ability to use material energy through their wealth and through their position. They're most miserable. We hear the statistics, especially in the West, and now it's happening here also, how people who have a lot suffer the most. Most suicides are from wealthy people. The most, you know, drug addictions are from wealthy people. Really. And so when it's used in the wrong way, it simply brings one more and more entangled in the meshes of the material energy, simply to suffer more and more. But that same wealth or that same energy that's being given, if it's used for the service of the Lord, it brings one to the highest, can bring one to the highest stage of spiritual realization. Rupa Goswami says, Anaya Shakti Visayam Yeyitam Upayunjite Nirbande Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagya Uchtite. That really, to live in this world means to see everything as the object to be used in the service of the Lord. If we claim anything as mine, that object will be the source of our entanglement and further cycle of birth and death. Even the claim on the subtle level, this is my intelligence, this is my, you know, abilities, this is my, all these things. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, what is that verse? Rasaham apsakuntaya, pabasmi sasi surya, Pranava Savabhadeshu Sabdike Purusham Nishu. He says, Sabdike Purusham Nishu. He ends the verse. He says, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun of moon, the syllable Om and the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and the ability in man. He says, I am the ability in man. So it's actually Krishna, or what we say, the mercy of the Lord, coming in different ways, that allows one to somehow or other do anything. I mean, we live such a precarious situation. At any moment, even the slightest change within the situation can render one, you know, immobile, unable to do anything. People have good brains, but if there's a story how one man, this is an interesting story, how one man, he left his home and he went visiting to another place, and he neglected to take any identification with him. So he was visiting another area of the country. This was in America. This was about 6-7 years ago. And while he was visiting this other place, he fell. He tripped and he fell and he hit his head on the ground. And then they took him to the hospital. And then when he came back to consciousness, he forgot everything. He developed amnesia because of the hitting his head on the ground. And he had no identification with him. So he didn't know who he was. None of the people who were around him knew who he was. There was no friends, there was no relatives. Nobody knew who he was. He didn't either. So what he did, he started his life over again. He got another job, he got another family, began his whole life over again. Started all over. And then it was amazing. Not long, I guess he had this tendency, but after some time, after many years, again he fell and hit his head on the ground. And guess what happened? He remembered his previous life. So, yeah, he was stuck. Yeah, his previous life came back and his present life was still there. So now he was, didn't know what to do. So, how precarious material energy is, and how frail the human body is. So this is the material world. Of course, the real identification is neither one of those things. Real identification is all living beings as eternal, loving servant of the Supreme One, eternally, in devotion. And that's our real position. And this material world is meant to facilitate that consciousness. When we see things in the right way, Krishna says, well, one who sees me in everything, and everything in me, I'm never lost, nor has he ever lost to me. So one should try to see Krishna with everything, and everything within Krishna. And at the same time understand one's position. One will not become proud if they practice basically two principles. One, to understand our position, that we're small. We're tiny, we're insignificant, and material energy is very powerful. I think, was it Bhavananda Prabhu was mentioned yesterday, how the tendency of disciples, Prabhupada was referring to his disciples, how they don't have any fear of Maya. They think that Maya is insignificant. And they don't understand the power and the subtle activities of the material energy. Maya is very strong. Therefore, one has to understand their position and at the same time serve the Vaishnavas, both. Simply understanding their position is not enough. One has to become the humble servers of the devotees. And then one will start to realize their position. Position is not the enjoyer. The position is not to try to enjoy the facilities of devotional service. There are so many facilities that are enjoyable, but they're all given as an opportunity for service. Everything in Krishna consciousness is enjoyable. But if one approaches Krishna consciousness with a mood of enjoyment, then one may be in the wrong consciousness. One should try to approach in the mood of service. So what makes a devotee happy is the opportunity to serve. The opportunity to serve is really the greatest opportunity, because it gives us a chance to actually come back to our eternal position. So a devotee is always eager to serve in a way that is pleasing, in a way that is edifying. So we should always look forward to devotional service, no matter what it is. Prabhupada said one may be cleaning the floor, one may be worshipping the deity, but they're the same. They're the same. It's not so much the service you do, it's the consciousness by which you perform the service. Which means how eager you are to perform that service. The eagerness is actually attracts the attention of the Lord in devotional service. So this particular verse is interesting, because it really goes to the heart of the downfall of Vedic society, is that simply by one's material qualification and birth, one somehow or other starts to identify with that, and then one commits offenses. Prabhupada talks about how when Aurangzeb was here, that real wicked, cruel, hard-hearted ruler, he had some powers, and he was ruling many sections of India. So what he did in order to increase the Muslim population, he made a tax that if you were a Hindu, you had to pay tax. And the poor Hindus, they were in a bind, because they couldn't pay the tax. And at the same time, the Brahmins, the caste Brahmins, were rejecting the poor Hindus because they were born in what we say a very obscure family, maybe born in the Sudra family, not born in the Brahmin family. So they were not allowed to worship according to their religion. They couldn't worship in the temples. They had to worship separately. Prabhupada said sometimes even when a Sudra would pass by a Brahmin's house, the Brahmin would close his door, because he felt that if a breeze came along and touched the body of a Sudra, and that breeze touched me, then I would become contaminated. Yeah. It was so strong, this caste system, that it became just a sense of exploitation and very exclusionary. So many of the poor Hindus who were not allowed to worship because of their particular poor poverty and their apparent low birth, they became Muslims, because they weren't being accepted by the Hindu society, and at the same time they had to pay a tax which they couldn't pay. So to avoid the tax, they became Muslims. Prabhupada said, therefore, many of the Muslims, the Muslim population that grew in India, was simply coming from Indians. It wasn't coming from outside. It was coming by this rigid caste system, and that excluded those who were born in lower families for proper worship. So, we see. And then Brahmins were thinking, I know scripture, I know God. Sometimes even today, you go out and preach. Someone says, yes, I'm born in a Brahmin family, I know Krishna, I know devotee, yes, I know all these things. But you speak to them, and based on Bhagavad Gita, they say, well, Krishna is not God. He's just some powerful personality that came and spoke some philosophic, religious philosophy. Yeah, a lot of times, you know, they don't even believe that Krishna is one of the many gods. One of the many gods. So Brahman must know the scriptures and ultimately take up the process of devotional service. And then one is actually becomes qualified, not simply by, you know, having, Prabhupada said, 2 cent thread, two pice thread. And he's having a thread. Anyone can buy that. Prabhupada wanted to show that by this Krishna conscious movement that real Brahminical life means to take up devotional service. And then one becomes better than a Brahmin. One actually transcends the whole Varnashram system and comes to the process of Daivi Varnashram, or spiritual Varnashram. And that is that one is engaged in devotional service to the Lord, one is in the best position. And one can perform any activity. And people determine, you know, boast by activity. Well, I'm a Brahmin and therefore I can't do this. But a devotee can do anything. It's for the service of the Lord. He can do anything, whatever. Doesn't matter. It could be the simplest service. It can be something that is considered to be, a very important service. But it's for the Lord, and one can take the opportunity, take the mercy of the Lord, and perform the activity. And not simply become proud of one's birth or one's position. Again, material pride is an abomination, because it actually is based on the grand illusion that you're this material body. And that is the first stage. We were talking here yesterday from Bhavananda Prabhu, the first principle of ignorance is to identify the self with the body. That's the first principle of ignorance. And from that principle, all other forms of ignorance develop. I am this body. Or I am anything connected with the body. It's easy. It's difficult to get rid of these conceptions. It's not easy to fall into it. It's difficult to get rid of it. Very difficult, because it's due to the association of material energy. Therefore, as one takes up the process of devotional service and gets the knowledge that comes by way of devotional service, one can free themselves from these, what we say, misconceptions that I am this body. It's very strong. Okay, so it's about 9 o'clock. Stop here. Are there any questions, comments, anyone? You're all so nicely engaged in devotional service. Mahashringa Prabhu, any question? Do we have a microphone? Is the microphone's coming.
I theoretically heard this and believe that I am not this body. For so many times I have been hearing this. But still the mind, when it comes to the practical field, 99% of the times I forget that I am not this body. I act as I am this body, like my business dealings and my dealing with the...
Yeah, forgetfulness is a symptom of being associated with the material energy. One of the characteristics of material energy or Maya is to make one forget. Forget the relationship with Krishna, forget their real identity. So we have to be aware. Devotee means conscious. Conscious is consciousness, Krishna conscious. Conscious of Krishna, conscious of my my position in relationship to Krishna, my position in relationship to others. So we have to cultivate Krishna consciousness. And that cultivation means we have to remember. Those that we sing every day the prayers to the spiritual master, Narottam Das Thakur's prayer. Chakshusam Dhiraye Janmi Janmi Prabhu Se Dibhigyan Vidde Prakasito. The spiritual master has opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. What is that torchlight of knowledge? Dibhigyan. What is that Dibhigyan? Transcendental knowledge. What is that? Prabhupada explains, what is that Dibhigyan? The Dibhigyan is, you are Krishna's eternal servant. That is who you are. The spiritual master teaches or gives that knowledge, Dibhigyan, this is your identity. So this is real transcendental knowledge, to know that I am Krishna's servant, eternally. Not just for one life. I am eternally Krishna's servant. You know, we've had many births, we've had many families, we've had many occupations, we've had many situations. Each life, something new, something different. I see many people who come from India, they come to the West, and they just take up all the activities of the Westerners. I mean, one of the most stupidest activities in the West is these, I don't know if, of course you don't, maybe never exposed to these, they have these TV shows. They're like quiz shows. And they have these people bidding for different prizes, and you answer in different questions, and you get different points, and they give you a refrigerator, and they give you a car or something. They give you everything. And so people go and they clap when somebody wins. I was on an airplane coming over just yesterday, and you know, I was on Air India. And they had these quiz shows with, it was all Indians. Wow, it's come to, even the Indians are engaged in these stupid quiz shows. I said, wow, really, now things are really hitting rock bottom. And they were just clapping, and somebody won a prize. Oh, it's so excited, you know. I said, oh my God. Yeah. And so people who come to the West, they come, they have their Vedic culture, they come, they take all up the activities of the West. They're ashamed to be known as Indians when they come to the West. Actually, many of them. You'd be surprised. They want to be like the Americans and do all the same things, you know. Sometimes they even change their name. I know one man, his name was Shyam Patel. He doesn't call himself Shyam anymore, he calls himself Sam. Sam Patel. Yeah. And what else? Chaturbhai Patel has become Chuck Patel. Yeah. It's just, you know, they drop all these American, they change their name, become Americans, really. And they do everything else. So in the next life, you can imagine what their situation will be. So, you know, this is, take up the activities of good births, good situation. If we forget, identify with the externals, perform those external activities, you get the results. The results is your consciousness develops a certain mood, and that consciousness projects you into your next life. And you take birth according to your consciousness, according to your desires, like that. Any other questions? is fully absorbed in devotional service, preparing for the wonderful festival, the Pushpa Abhishek of Shri Shri Rana Gopinathji. So, thank you very much for your kind attention. Shri Rana Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.